Welcome to another episode of Disrupt. I'm Home Healthcare News Editor Andrew Donlin. Today, our guest is Suzanne Turchetti, the president of the New York-based home health and home care agency, HCR Home Care. In the conversation, we get into HCR Home Care's story as a growing, part-employee-owned agency, how to survive on slimming margins, the trends that matter most to home-based care providers heading into 2024, and much more. Before we get into that conversation, a word from our sponsor, Care Academy. Care Academy is like the Netflix of healthcare, with more than 500 engaging classes to train, retain, and upskill care staff. Care Academy's unique platform takes your training to the next level, all while saving you time. Easy-to-use mobile classes make learning accessible anytime, anywhere, with support for multiple languages. Level up with specialized certifications in areas from dementia to mental health. Simple compliance reporting makes your audits a breeze. Achieve cost containment using text messaging and interoperability with multiple ecosystem platforms. Visit careacademy.com to start a free trial today. Okay, Suzanne, let's start with background on HCR Home Care and also your journey there. I know you've been with the company for a long time.
Yeah, I have. Thank you for having me. So HCR story, I love to tell it. I go to orientation every Monday and I talk about HCR's history, and people are always so like very interested in the story because our founder and our current board chair, Louise Warner, founded the company in 1978. She started it as a personal care business. She was actually living in Washington, D.C., and she was looking for a company to hire to help take care of her father, who lived in Rochester, and she couldn't find a company that could help her out, so she decided to start one. She definitely has that entrepreneurial gene, but she started the company with a $3,000 cash advance on her MasterCard because she couldn't get a business loan because she was a woman and didn't have a male co-signer at the time. So she started the company with a home health aide and a nurse and herself, and that is how we started. So over the years, we've grown. In 1988, we became a certified home health agency. You know, like I said, we started in personal care and then went into home health in the late 80s. And then, you know, I think we've grown pretty significantly over the years. And I think a lot of it has to do with embracing technology early on. We actually got our first computers in 1982, which is very early in the technology, you know, phase. So I think technology has always been a big part of who we are and what we do. And that's carried through over the years. So when I started with the company in 2005, we were only serving in one county. That's Monroe County, and it's where Rochester, our headquarters, is. And, you know, we had maybe 200 employees and, you know, had a nice little business going. But I think, you know, Louise, who was the CEO at the time, really saw that we were way too small. And if we didn't, you know, scale the business, we really weren't going to make it as, you know, as the industry consolidated and, you know, just there was, you know, the drive for efficiency. So what we started doing in 2009 is we started acquiring county-run certified home health agencies. So there was a big push at that time for the counties to get out of the home health business, and they were all putting their agencies up for bid in an RFP format. So we bid on all of the counties that came up for purchase. We bid on all of them that were contiguous to Monroe County. And then some other counties across the state and upstate New York started coming up for bid. So we just started, you know, really this mass acquisition process. And that's how we ended up being, you know, one of the largest agencies in upstate New York. So we served 25 counties for personal care and then 22 counties for home health. So it's grown significantly since I started in 2005. I saw, you know, extreme growth over the last, you know, almost 20 years. So it's been a really exciting and getting to kind of go along for the ride the entire time has been amazing. But that's the HCR story. My story is, like I said, I started in 2005. I started out as the executive assistant to the CEO, and I worked my way up. I took on, you know, different roles and responsibilities throughout the organization. I think I have overseen every single department in the entire organization over the years in one way or another. But I think, you know, Louise sort of mentored me and groomed me into her successor. And she stepped down at the end of last year and I took over. She's, like I said, she's still our board chair, so she's still very involved. But, you know, it's been, it seems like a long time, but it has, it seems like it's flown by though at the same time. So
that is fantastic.
That's a little bit about me.
Yeah. What a story. And I've talked to a lot of leaders over the years, Suzanne, and one of the things that comes up a lot is the ones that have been able to go through the company and work in different parts and divisions of it always say that that's very valuable to them once they get to the top.
Yeah. And you know, it's funny you say that because I get this question in orientation all the time from new employees. They're like, how did you do that? Like, how did you go from executive assistant to president? And that is one thing I always tell them. I said, my short answer is I never said no. When somebody asked me to help out or volunteer or stay late for a project or help on a grant or, you know, lend a hand in a certain area, I always said yes if I was able to. And I learned so much, and I'm just naturally inquisitive as a, you know, that's my personality. So I was always asking questions and, you know, asking why and how. And, you know, just being naturally curious, I think, is extremely, you know, important if you want to grow inside of a company. You can't just operate inside your little box and understand what the big picture is if you operate like that. So that's my always advice to people is never say no.
Absolutely. I do have two questions before we move forward, just on HCR. I was just at a conference this past week. And you probably know this, but home care and home health people can never agree on what to call each. So just a point of clarification, we're talking home care as in personal home care, whether private pay or Medicaid based. And then we're talking Medicare certified home health.
Yes. So that's a great point because in New York, we have acronyms that we use that aren't widely used outside of New York State. So I always have to remember when I go to conferences that I need to refer to it differently. But in New York State, we call, you know, our Medicare home health, we call that a CHA, a certified home health agency. And then in our personal care services, which is private pay and Medicaid, we call it our LICSA or our licensed services. So those are New York acronyms. I'm not sure if other states use them, but they're not widely known. So people look at me like, you know, like I have three heads sometimes when I use those acronyms outside of New York. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, Medicare certified and personal care is what we're dealing with.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Very glad to know that. And so I also saw that HCR is part employee owned. Can you explain how that works?
Yeah, so HCR is about a little over half employee owned. We have, you know, we started our employee stock ownership plan in 2004, the year before I started. And it was really, you know, just designed to be a long-term benefit to try to retain good employees at HCR. So when HCR does well and we have a surplus at the end of the year, that money goes back to the employees in the form of shares of the company. And then when they retire or leave the company after a certain period of time, they can roll their money over into another tax deferred account, or if they're of retirement age, they can just take a distribution. So, you know, it's kind of a way to entice our staff to, you know, share in the, first of all, they share in the success, but be part of the success, and really encourages them to try to think of ways to act like an owner. Like, how can we save money? How can we do things, you know, better, faster, stronger? Can you refer another employee into the organization? Refer a patient in, you know, just little things like that to get that kind of ownership mentality going has made a huge difference in our operation.
And so has that made a marked difference on retention? What do your retention numbers look like? Like, do you see that paying off in real time?
You know, I do pre-COVID, I would say yes. Right now, I would say no. because we experienced extremely high turnover during COVID, much like, you know, many other agencies did. And, you know, our profits were significantly, you know, decreased during COVID than they were, you know, pre-COVID. So we haven't been able to contribute as much as we used to the plan. You know, I anticipate that changing as, you know, we keep rebuilding, but COVID really put a knife into that a little bit. But typically I would say absolutely, because if you can get people to adhere to that culture, it definitely, and then they see numbers, you know, when they get their statements, they see numbers that kind of say, okay, you know, hey, this, I'm in this for the long term. But, you know, I think COVID took a lot from all of us. And I think that was one of the things that that hurt, you know, it kind of hurt our ESOP, our ownership mentality there.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. I do think, though, that it's a great model for home care specifically, because there's a lot of workers who really care about the mission, but they're always torn between, mm-hmm. you know, the mission and being able to make more money elsewhere. And this way,
absolutely.
They feel like they can get the best of both worlds.
You know, and that's funny you say that, because I do think a lot of people, I mean, sometimes I feel, you know, with, you know, productivity requirements and just asking people to do more all the time, I do feel, you know, like in some ways, that could drive people away. But if they're, you know, they love home care, they love what they do, they love the difference they're making, and they believe in the mission of HCR, they're going to stay. And I've heard that actually from a lot of people. I do put my calendar out every month for people to just book like what I call employee chats with me. And I get the best conversations with some of our staff, and you can just feel their passion for home care and for our patients. And I know, you know, even if they're disgruntled with HCR for the day or they're having a bad week, like they care about our patients and what we're doing. And that's what keeps them here. And, you know, me being able to talk to them and figure out what their pain points are, what their challenges are in the field, I think really helps me try to, you know, make sure that they do, you know, feel supported and heard, and that I am listening, and we are as a leadership team listening to what they're facing out there. So, you know, it's just, I always say we have the best employees, but I mean, when I talk to them one-on-one and I hear their stories, it just, I'm speechless sometimes when I hear what they're up against and what we're asking them to do out there.
I can imagine. And one thing I also wanted to know too, you have a care management piece as well. I know care management is something that home care provider leaders have really, expressed how much they think it matters to me before, but it's sort of still rare as an offering across the country. What do you think the value is in care management for HCR?
Well, our care management is something that came out of the Medicaid redesign team from New York State during the Cuomo administration. And really what it's designed to do is help people, well, first of all, reduce Medicaid spending, number one. And number two, it's to really designed to help people with the social determinants of health. So what it does is we contract with what's called health homes, and they're kind of a fiscal intermediary for Medicaid. And they, you know, we work with, you know, Medicaid recipients who, you know, may be struggling and have different comorbidities or different, you know, social determinants they're dealing with that are preventing them from, you know, taking care of their health. So it's been a game changer for us, because not only can we refer, you know, our you know, certified patients or our personal care patients into the program, we can, you know, take referrals out of there as well. But, you know, it's been a really great program to help, you know, to help our, you know, I would say folks in the community that, you know, may be struggling or, you know, are just really having a hard time just managing all of their health issues in addition to everything else they're dealing with. So it's been great. It's started, I think, maybe about 10 years ago now, but it's been growing ever since.
Okay, so in terms of payer sources, obviously you're dealing, it seems like, with private pay, Medicaid, Medicare, and I assume with some health plans as well. There's a lot of volatility right now, obviously, right? Because you have Medicaid that on one hand is a more rosy payer source than it probably was in the past. Medicare home health, obviously most of the people listening to this will know that there's some frustrating cuts going on there. And then private pay, yeah, obviously prices are rising, and in some ways that squeezes out part of the population. So how are you grappling with all of those different payer sources and how they're sort of going up and down? And do you change your strategy based on that, or do you just kind of keep the course and know that there's an up and down?
Yeah, I mean, we know that, you know, there's going to be some sort of proposed Medicare cut every year. I mean, that's always, you know, something that we're used to dealing with. I think one of the biggest issues we're having, and I think this will be one of our themes for 2024, like, how are we going to deal with this margin compression issue? That's really a huge problem for us. You know, we've had to increase our wages, so, you know, to retain and hire staff that we lost during COVID. And, you know, on the other hand, our rates have not increased, especially on, you know, what we call our commercial payers, as quickly as our wages have increased. So really, using the data that we have, we try to go to the payers and say, look, you know, this is, you know, what we're doing for your members. We're keeping them out of the hospital. We're increasing, or, you know, their outcomes are better after, you know, we've done a few episodes with them, or whatever the case is. We usually try to present the value that home care adds, to try to increase our rates with them. So, you know, it's definitely a battle, I think, but it's something that we have really tried to do, is sit down and have those conversations. You know, sometimes it's tough, especially with the big national payers that, for example, we're a big player in New York State. So, you know, meeting with those, you know, New York State specific payers is a lot more doable than, say, meeting with like a United Healthcare, for example. Like, we're just too small to be on their radar, if that makes sense. We're like too big and too small at the same time. So we struggle with certain payers, but, you know, just get at the table with them, for example. But I think, you know, really just proving the value that we bring to the table for their members is the best way to increase our rates with them.
Yeah. And I was going to bring that up because I've talked to a lot of providers, even some of the big ones, you know, like Addus, for instance. They have home health and home mm-hmm. care, just like HCR does. And they think there's yep. a massive value proposition in layering on home health on the home care and what you can then do for payers. So is that part of what you're sort of describing to payers as well, and trying to get them to listen to that and show them obviously that the outcomes are superior when patients do have access to both those critical home-based care services?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's a really key piece of it, because once their acute episode is over, you know, and we discharge them from the certified agency, they may still need help with things like activities for daily living, bathing, dressing, ambulation, those types of things that we can help on the personal care side. Right. And, you know, it may not be something that they need help with every day, but it's certainly a support that, you know, that we can provide once that acute episode is over, and really showing them that we have that continuum of home care services here. It's definitely a huge differentiator for us.
Yep, absolutely. I can imagine. So you mentioned data. Data is notoriously something that the home care industry at large has not been great at. Data tracking, gleaning insights from that data. It seems like HCR is a little bit different. Can you explain how you're utilizing data right now?
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously CMS data is extremely delayed, so it's very difficult to, you know, rely on that for any sort of, you know, real-time trending. I think, you know, I cringe sometimes when I look at the publicly reported outcomes in the star ratings, because I know that those are a year old, and, you know, maybe that's not who that agency is, you know, now. They're a lot different than who they were back, you know, a year ago. So to me, that's very frustrating, but it is what it is. But we do have so much data here. We use, so our EMR is Home Care Home Base, and we also, you know, supplement our data with SHP. So we have a ton of real-time data. I mean, between Home Care Home Base and SHP, what we can produce down to the clinician level is unbelievable. And the challenge, though, is turning that data into something that's actionable, something that we can, you know, pass back to our clinical leaders and say, this is what you need to do. Because, you know, if you're just sitting there looking at data, I mean, sometimes it's just overwhelming to the point where you're like, I don't even know what to do with all this. Right. So having, you know, our finance team, our analytics team that can really drill down and really produce some, things that, actionable ideas that can, drive our outcomes and our results is key to managing that data.
Yeah, totally agree. And another thing that I think has been coming up a lot in these conversations is that point exactly, that you can have all the data in the world, but if you're not using it, then it's pretty much useless. For instance, with AI, people were talking about AI a lot, but even the AI people are saying, hey, if you haven't been tracking things, if you don't really know what's going on at your agency, AI is not going to be able to help you, because we have to feed the AI machine something in order for it to help you out. So I'm curious, too, have you thought anything about AI and how that could help out with your organization in the future? Or are we not far down the road enough?
We have talked a little bit about it, particularly looking at it in our billing and insurance authorizations departments, mm-hmm. Kind of evaluating some of the organizations who are helping agencies like us do it, but we are not implementing anything yet, but definitely something on our radar.
Yep, I think that makes sense. I was hearing a lot about that area is a place that home care providers think could help. Also, scheduling is something probably in the future that it could help out with, to make sure schedules are even and fitting caregivers' needs, especially in their personal lives. Moving on, as we near 2024 here, we're talking in the second week of December here. I'm curious what you're really focused on heading into 2024. What are some of the trends that you're going to be keeping an eye on? I know you mentioned one already.
Yep. I already talked about margin compression. That's one of the things that we are really focused on for 2024. I think, I always say that I have been saying that 2023 was a big rebuilding year for us, recovering from those couple years of high turnover. New York State had several wage mandates that we needed to comply with on the personal care side, and really rebuilding the staff and the business that we lost during COVID. So I feel like now that we're, in that back to that kind of baseline, we can start focusing on, some different things like process issues, maybe, communication, some re-education for our staff. I think during COVID, we were, hiring people so fast and really kind of fast tracking them out into the field to take care of patients. We may have missed, some of the key pieces of, especially if they were new to home care, some of the key pieces that they might need some re-education on. So I think 2024 will be a kind of back to basics type of year where we're, focusing on education and process and, continuing to grow, of course. But, that margin compression piece is the biggest factor that we need to battle next year. And going after those rate increases will be, extremely important to be aggressive with that.
Yeah, obviously rate increases is the biggest help, right? But is there anything you're doing internally to sort of ease those margin compressions, whether it's, deploying more technology or trying to become more efficient operationally?
Efficiency in the office has been one of our key focuses for 2023, really right-sizing the staff to make sure that we are staffed appropriately in all those support areas for the organization, like you mentioned, scheduling, billing, insurance, HR, IT, making sure that we don't have excess staff or we're not short staff that's, preventing a backup in workflow, for example. So, I think that's one of our main focuses. It has been, and it will continue. But we've tried a lot of different things to entice people to stay. Like we started a bonus program. We're doing some incentivization apps for some of our home health aides. So there's a lot of cool things that we're doing on the workforce side to try to get people, to stay engaged and, kind of adhere to our culture. So there's a lot going on, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, no, I think that's probably the case. across both the home care and home health industries. I'm curious, do you have a prediction for 2024 about the home care industry, the home health industry at large, something that you've been thinking about that may change, or something that you think will define one of those industries moving forward?
Well, I think the appetite for home health is going to continue to grow. I think COVID shone a light on the desire for people to age in place in their homes. A lot of the literature is saying that, by 2025, that, a lot of what's being done in outpatient facilities and in hospitals is going to be done in the home. When you look at the hospital to home program that is growing in the country, I think, there is a shift to doing much more in the home. But our job as agencies is going to be to be prepared, like with staffing and education and technology, in order to do that and meet that need. I think home care has historically been one of the last thought of parts of the continuum of care, but with COVID, it's really come to the forefront. And I think there's going to be an increased amount of attention on home care as the consolidation in the industry happens, as payers are looking to find the most inexpensive way to care for their members. And it's a good time to be in home care, in my opinion.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Disrupt. For more news and insights on the home health, home care, and hospice industries, subscribe to our daily or weekly newsletters at homehealthcarenews.com. I'm Andrew Donlin, and this has been a production of Aging Media Network, Chicago, Illinois.